Okay, we'll go ahead and get started.
John is on his way. John, Passion.
Okay.
He's on his bicycle. I passed him.
Wow.
He was a ways back, so... Yeah, like the kind you pedal.
Okay, well, he can catch up. I will just preface this by... first of all, introducing our newest Board of Health member, Dr. Glenda Dvorak,
from the ISR University, works in the Vet College.
Okay. And this is her first meeting. And then I'll also preface this by saying we need to keep this as short as possible. Kristen has sworn to the election official in the auditor's office that we'd be out by 4 so they could set up the, because they display the results for the primary election. In here for the public and the press to come in. So they need to come in here by 4 o'clock and get set up. And that's just a reminder for anybody that hasn't voted yet today to go out and vote. Yeah. So we'll move down. And second item is the consent agenda. All items under the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a request is made prior to the time board votes on the motion. If I can get a motion to approve the consent agenda. Is there a second?
Okay.
We've got a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Public forum. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health today. Is there anybody that has anything that they need to talk to the board about? Not seeing anyone. We'll move down to additional items. Okay, because Margaret's tied up just a little bit, so we'll leave that where it's at for right now. We'll go down to the agents report from Homeward, Eileen Mullen and Terry Olinger.
This is Eileen Mullen, Public Health. I'll start, and then Terry Olinger will give her report. I've got a couple of items that I'd like to go over before Terry introduces what's been going on in the public health immunization arena. I'm going to start. I have 2 points that I'll talk with you about. One is the County Health Rankings Roadmap, and the other is going to be our Public Health Emergency Grant. So I'm going to start with this county rankings and roadmap. It's a very brief presentation, so we'll get out on time. It was about a year ago, I think, that I introduced the county health rankings to the committee, and it's time just to reintroduce that and show what the updates are. And as a brief reminder, the county health rankings is a collaborative program between the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute and the Robert Wood Foundation. And it's a rankings that show that where we live is where we live, where we learn, and where we work, and where we play really does matter in our health. Not sure if I know how to. Oh, there we go. It's just slow, like you said. Go back up. Okay, what I'll do now is, once I've got this figured out, is go through why we rank, what the ranking models are, and then what we can do with this. And so starting out with why we rank, it's up here is just all the reasons why we rank. And it's rankings are kind of as a hook to get our attention. We can use this with the media coverage and engage the community on how we as a county rank. And I think rankings are just a way for us to compare ourselves with other communities. We like to see where we're at, you know, with others. And so it's a beginning point for discussions. This next slide is the county health rankings model, logic model. And it shows that we start out with the population-based data that's collected. We get our health rankings. We use this for media attention and to engage our communities into some action. We then, after we engage, we try to do some health policies and programs that will, the outcome, improve our health. We as a nation, want to work county by county to improve our health of our nation. And here in Story County, we've identified that we want to be the healthiest county in Iowa. Well, Iowa, of course, wants to be the healthiest state. And I think you'll see that we're on the right track here. The model and the measure is next. The county health rankings ranks the has two rankings. One is the health outcomes, and one is the health factors. The health outcomes is about how healthy our county is today. And the other one is what factors do we need to have in place, or do we already have in place to make sure, to show where we'll be moving in the future. This next model, its outline is, just shows a little bit more detail what I just showed you. At the top on the left is the health outcomes, and it's in the green boxes. And what that is showing over to the right, the mortality and the morbidity of our of a county. It shows the length of life and the quality of life. Again, it tells us whether people are dying too early, and tells us how well people are feeling within our county. And these aren't our measurements. We'll be getting to those. The health factors, again, is in the blue boxes, and that's tomorrow's health. So if you move over to the right, those blue factors include health behaviors, clinical care, social and economic factors, and physical environment. And when we did our Story County Community Needs Assessment afterwards, we blocked each of our outcomes into these four factors because we wanted to make sure and use these rankings as best as we could as we presented to the public. Then over to the right of those are then examples of the different behaviors, clinical care that can affect us. Then at the bottom is the, in the orange, I believe, is the programs and policies that determine outcomes. Again, the results of the work that we may do as a, as an outcome of these indicators. So how are the measures selected? Basically, they use valid and reliable and recognized sources. They also use ones that are low cost and or free. And again, it's just a snapshot. So the resources they use are good, but it is a snapshot. When I haven't given you a pamphlet that each of you have there, and it, when you get into the website, it's got a great resource for information. And when you first get on, this is what you'll see. You can click on any state. When you click on Iowa, then you can click on to any county that you'd like to click on to. The lightest colored counties in this, in the state here, are the ones that are the healthiest outcomes. We're looking at a health outcome on this one. So you'll see Story County is white, and so we are among the healthier. The next slide is shows the health outcomes, and it breaks it down, and this is our county. So you'll see at the right, we're number 7 in ranking out of 99 counties, and that's pretty darn good. Now, as we go along, we still recognize as a county that while we're looking pretty darn good, we still have a lot of opportunity. So you have at the top left, Story County, your error margin, which is 95% confidence, which means that like 95% sure that the actual number is the given range. Then you have the benchmark, national benchmark, then you have Iowa. So you can see how we're doing against others. And this is mortality and morbidity. This one map shows the health factors. So again, this is measuring tomorrow's health. How are we set up as a county? We're in the light area, so we're still in a good rank. The next slide shows us that we are in the status of 2 ranking out of 99 counties. When you scroll down through here and you look through your brochure, again, it starts with health behaviors and clinical care, and the next slide will be social, economic, and physical environment. So while you see that we're in, let's see, the far right is Iowa, and the national benchmark is next to the right of that one, third one over. You'll see that we may be close, maybe just a little over, just a little under. Again, here in Story County, we feel we should take those and move with those that show us that we have the greatest opportunity. I guess, you know, just the fact that two of our towns in Story went for the blue zone was a good example of how we're into it in this county. Then last, moving into action, and that's where the Board of Health is so important, as well as other agencies or committees. This shows that just the model of how we collaborate with other community members to work into getting the public engaged, understand what our resources are so that we can do policy amendments to help improve the health of our county. And when we go into this website, you'll also be able to find just more webinars and different ways to get grants in a county to help us move forward into making some changes. And I wanted to remind the board that we, after the Story County Community Health Needs Assessment was done, we developed a Story County Quality of Life Alliance Committee that's made up of nearly every coalition in the county. And this group meets quarterly. And I'm going to show you the website we put together that you can refresh your memory on it if you like. We're really just getting it organized. But again, we've used these health factors. We've used the outcome from the Story County Community Needs Assessment. We identified our priorities, and these coalitions, we're working as a group in this alliance to make sure that we're not overlapping and wasting, you know, money by not working together. And we're also then trying to work together to use grants and share in the wealth of that. So this is just, again, a slide that shows if you work all the way to the right, these are some ways you can make a difference. I pretty much just said that. And this is the Story County Quality of Life Alliance website. And I'll be happy to email this to you. I see the www is gone, but it's www.fcql.com, I believe. It could be .org. But I think I'll probably get that emailed to you guys. And what we are still working on this, the Iowa State students are kind of keeping this up for us, and Greg Welk and his group. And the coalitions are all going to eventually have all their members on it and their missions, and so that we'll have it linked to the Story County website here also, so that all of us will be connected. So I'll just keep you updated as time goes along as far as the alliance and different work we're doing. And I'll roll right into then the next presentation here. This is about our public health emergency preparedness grant. Notes that I'd like to use. Here we go. When this is coming up, you also have in front of you our finance report. And I'll just briefly on this, but you usually what you see is the comments to the right of how we've met our outcomes of the grants that we are utilizing in order to fund some of the work that we do. The outcomes, the comments are pretty much standard. We're on track to meeting our outcomes, and I just want to point out every one of our grant dollars have been used to date. So some years you folks will ask about now, are we going to use all of our money, and we've used it all, and we're using other resources at this point in time. So if you have any questions on that, don't mean to rush you through. But.
All right.
Okay, this public health emergency preparedness grant, each year we have a grant. We've been getting this grant for, maybe 5 years. I can't recall. But, and this grant, we have used it in the past. I'm going to go through why we use this grant, what it's done for us. And we've got some changes coming forward, and so I'm going to use this time to talk about those changes. And Paul and I have spoke briefly before, updating him a little bit on this, and we also invited some others here, including Keith, emergency manager, just in case we want to have some discussion about this afterwards. Must be siesta time for the computer. Okay, our current project.
Get one. 1st of July. Yeah.
Our current process is that the local public health and the hospitals independently receive emergency preparedness grant dollars every year to start the new fiscal year that begins July 1st. And these grant dollars that are awarded in these are population-based, and so Story County has a fairly large population. We've had enough dollars that have allowed us to put some things in place. That are, we think, very valuable. With each of these grants, there's capabilities that we need to meet each year. And some of these capabilities would be things like you need to have an emergency preparedness plan. And so you put that together. And here in Story County, we did a good job with that by collaborating with our partners here in the county. Terry Ellinger, our public health nurse, she didn't just sit in the closet and write up the grant, but engaged many, many members of the community to make this happen. We also use the plan. Some of the capabilities would be to exercise the plan. So you have the plan. What good is it if you don't know if it works and don't know who your partners are? So we did a great deal of that. Also in the current process, we have regional planners that the state has given us, and these regional planners are assigned to regions which consist of several counties. They meet quarterly, and at these quarterly times, it's an opportunity for the counties to all talk about where they're at with their emergency preparedness plans, learn from each other, get some guidance from the state, so on. These planners are used in various ways. Some counties who do not get as many dollars in their grant as others might use them a lot more rigorously, where they may use them to actually help develop the plan, to provide education to their communities, to develop just a lot of resources that they use them for. Story County has not used the planners all that much because, as I said, we were very fortunate to have a great infrastructure of collaboration with community partners. So before I go into what the change is, I'm going to talk about briefly why the change. There is going to be a change in the way the grant is managed and handled, and the reason for that is because the federal government, as well as the state, believe that the hospitals and the public health need to be aligned a little closer. We had all of us throughout the nation had separate grants doing our thing. Some probably did better than others. I don't know. So another piece, it hasn't been just said to us, but you can read between the lines, the federal dollars are decreasing. So we need to get infrastructures together in the county so that and around counties so that we can survive without the help of the feds. So what they want us to do is focus on partnering, building partnerships. And so the plans rolling forward are forcing us to do that if we had not been counties that were already doing that. again, I'll be a little smug. I think Story County's done a fairly good job of collaboration within our county. We've done a nice job. That doesn't mean we can't do better. I just need to say that. And, of course, focusing on sustainability.
How does Iowa State play into this, with this? With us?
What's that?
Iowa State, the university. How do they play in with this?
They are one of our great partners. We've worked very well with Iowa State. And so that's a good question. So what is the change? It's kind of reiterating why the change. But first of all, it's a 5-year project to integrate public health and healthcare preparedness planners. And so over the next 5 years, those planners I was talking about will be weaned away, some fairly quickly. And that dollars that was spent on them will be brought back into the state and into the back to the counties. And then other things will be happening over the 5 years, and which I'll talk about just briefly. So it creates healthcare coalitions. And Mark, you asked how do we work with Iowa State. We consulted with them to help develop our plan. They've helped us exercise it. They've been at multiple levels with us and working with the hospitals, too. So it's just been a very good relationship, and we've been fortunate, I think, for that. So create healthcare coalitions. And when I say create healthcare coalitions, here is the direction now from the federal and the state, is that they want us to create coalitions that include 4 to 7 counties. So these 4 to 7 counties would include in these counties, of course, the hospitals that are in those counties. Again, the idea was to have 4 to 7 counties, but we're not real sure if you have to have 4 to 7. I think they're going to leave some flexibility to that, but that's just a guideline. In the future, which will be after this grant year that we're coming into, if you're not in a coalition, then you will not be able to get any grant dollars for this. So you must play to receive. And then, of course, we're changing from to supporting preparedness activities instead of developing them. So that it's going to be really the focus is getting that infrastructure in place, getting those coalitions, finding out how you play together, how you work well together. Ultimately, next year at this time, the grant will be awarded to that coalition. The dollar amounts to be awarded were not, that has not been determined yet. And I think I'll just skip to the next slide here about what the year will look like and then some of our challenges. We need to develop the coalition by June 28, 2013, about a year from now. And during this first year, like I said, we will wean the regional planners out. For Story County, that's not a big deal because we have not utilized those planners. For some counties, it really is a big deal. Well, also, in this year, the state needs to create the funding formulas for the coalitions, and that's pretty big. So we're going to start trying to develop our coalitions, and we do not know really the guidelines at this point of who all should be in the coalition besides hospitals and public health, how many. And we're not sure. We have no idea how the money will be awarded. What we do know is when your coalition has been formed, that there will be one fiscal agent, and that fiscal agent, of course, that's where the grant comes through, will manage the dollars. So before these coalitions are finalized, we will want to have a pretty good idea of how the funding stream is going to look. We'll want a pretty good idea of the people that we're partnering with in this coalition, where their needs are. What's the base level of how much planning they've already done? We will need to have some guidelines, bylaws set up a little bit so that if we're getting in a relationship where we don't feel like it wasn't fair after we've already gotten into it. So there's going to be a lot of different activities like that going on in this year. And then this last slide, or next to last slide, I've sort of mentioned the challenges, but the challenges of what at least I see at this point, a few of us who have had discussions, is that the details aren't finalized. This since our last Board of Health meeting, basically, this was introduced to us. So it's all happened in a fairly tight time frame. And we do have a year to pull all this together, but again, we don't have the details to help us too much, have a little bit. I think another of the challenges is aligning the hospitals and the Board of Health interests. So we have two hospitals in this county. We have our Board of Health. We all work well together, but we may be coming from different viewpoints. I really don't know. It's too early in the game. Hospitals look at referral sources. Hospitals may look at who is their, what's their referral pattern. Who do I share my resources with the most? You know, there could be some factors that we as a Board of Health who are not in the competition like that might look at things differently. I do not know. We may look at in the county, who do we partner with most in other counties when it comes to other activities that are going on. A lot of the mental health things that are going on or some other. Anyway, I'm just introducing these thoughts because we want to make sure that in our county that we've aligned our interests well before we start, you know, going out and seeking our partners. Well, then, as a challenge of identifying those potential counties and hospitals who have similar desires, similar capabilities, and you have to recognize that every county has counties surrounding them, and so we're all to look at those counties immediately around us, so we all have different counties immediately around us, so we'll be doing a lot of chatting among a lot of different counties this year, and again, the tight timeline. So next steps would be then to determine the must-haves for Story County Public Health, and the hospitals will be doing that, and then we'll be pulling those must-haves together, aligning our expectations, start meeting with other counties and hospitals to determine the potential fit. And we've got progress and recommendations to the Board of Health, as well as hospitals will be reporting to their boards. So that's basically what I know, yeah.
Would it be good for us to have someone here at our board meetings from Story County Hospital as well as Mary Greeley? I'm not sure who that person would be. Would it be helpful for them to be in attendance to kind of help start formulating this togetherness?
At this point in time, I'm quite open to what you would recommend. There is a representative from Mary Greeley and from Story County Hospital, and then Terry and I, and we've invited Keith to a couple of meetings that we are starting those conversations, and we each are probably individually working with our respective reporting entities to kind of get some direction. And at this point, I would say we're all kind of just talking and waiting. And I would see if nothing, I think we have a good representation at the table. And I would see maybe as we start getting into this more, it would behoove to have the whole group come and talk sometime at a Board of Health meeting so you can hear from all of our perspectives, too. You know, we're really open. Yeah, and I just wanted you at this point in time, if you had any immediate thoughts, since you haven't heard this till now, you may not have a lot of thoughts about it, but if you had any direction or thoughts that you wanted us to keep in mind, I open that up now, or you could email me if you have anything in particular, and I likewise will feel comfortable emailing you if I need some thoughts in between.
Keith, do you have anything you want to add as far as, you know, when we look for these other counties that we want to build our partnerships with? I mean,
Morgan Story County Emergency Manager. This was discussed that the emergency management structure has got two different structures underneath it. The first one is a professional organization called IAMA,
Iowa Emergency Management Association. And then there was a regional structure that paralleled the regional structure that was utilized for the health grant that was a homeland security structure that is, because of restructuring of grants, has gone away. This was brought up at one of our regional meetings that they're still going on, and there is so very little guidance on this. It's extremely difficult to move forward with it because they're just throwing it out that you've got to do coalitions. So right now we're kind of waiting also, and I guess defining some of the goals and objectives of this coalition would probably be the main step forward. It's very important to us, obviously, because we do have good working relationship with the counties around us, and we would rely on each other's resources during an emergency.
We've contacted some counties and wanted to know if they wanted to start meeting and talking, and everyone's kind of, a few of them have said, well, I don't know, I think we just want to sit back a little bit. And so, you know, everyone's just really floundering a little with this, but I think that we in Story, maybe we're just drinking a lot of Starbucks, I don't know, but we want to move and get some coalition talking going, because I don't think it's going to be an easy to define which counties. We talked about Marshall, and Marshall's talking about some others on the other side of them. We've talked about Polk sort of talking about maybe not wanting any other counties. We think that Boone's probably fairly important for us to be with. Again, we haven't started any conversations, so I just see us sitting up at a lot of meetings and just starting to talk and see what flavor it goes. And emergency managers, though, are extremely important in this process. So even though they haven't been included in the grant yet, right? Or have you?
Yeah, that's a separate grant, completely from ours. Different criteria for applying, different criteria for meeting the objectives of the grant. So they've run kind of in parallel, but there has been a good attempts to set up good working relationships to maximize our benefits from our grants and their grants together.
I just ask that you keep us up to date. If you have any questions or anything, you always get a hold of me and kind of try to keep everybody up to speed as we go along, I guess. We'll learn as we go.
Probably a good thing we're meeting more often. I think Terry, thank you, Keith. I think Terry has a brief date here for, okay. She's been pretty busy, so I think we'd like to hear what she's doing. I'll just take this out while you're doing this.
All right. First off, I have listed communicable disease reports because it has taken the majority of my time since we've met last. We've had a whooping cough outbreak that had basically started on the east side of the county in Nevada, and it's moved to Ames. So it's basically the two school systems that are keeping us busy. They've had cases in both high schools, both junior highs, and both elementary schools. So I was making a lot of phone calls today and telling Eileen there's still a lot of coughing going on, a lot of coughing kids when you make calls. So I think it'll probably go on for the next 2 or 3 weeks and then settle down as summer progresses. We've also had, and I have listed 3 hepatitis cases. Actually, it's hepatitis B chronic carrier cases. They're chronic carrier cases, and we have 1 suspected rabies exposure case. So, and that was a dog bite. Our child immunization clinics continue to be busy. We are in the process of getting new software through the Iowa registry system. And let's see, Eileen updated you on emergency preparedness. We also had a lead coalition meeting at the beginning of May, and did some lead education work as far as developing a DVD. Student helped us with that, and Monica Benning, who's a high school nurse, she has a parent in class 3 times a month, and she's using that to educate new parents. So that is my report.
Okay.
Thank you. We'll go back to number four under additional items for Margaret, the decision regarding the adoption of the Story County open records. Yeah.
I apologize for being late.
You're going to be on TV?
I was on TV, yeah. Down at the lake. So, this was brought up at our last meeting regarding the open records policy and procedure that Story County Board of Supervisors adopted just a month or two ago. And when the health department tries to implement this, we run into some problems in that we do get a lot of information requests for one or two little things, like where is my septic system located, what were the last test results on our wells, things like that, that really don't sit under the umbrella of open records policy and procedure. But we've been sort of informally told that, yeah, go ahead and treat that as an information request. And so if we follow the procedure that Story County has laid out, that creates a lot more work for us because we have to document it and then send that information up to HR. And quite frankly, it's just easy to forget, you know, because we get a call from a pumper and blah, 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 you know, if we just go merrily on our way. So I really do respect this open records and policy procedure. It's a great idea, but I don't think it's focused on those little things. So what we would like to do to get around that is to, if there is a request for more than two parcels, then we would go ahead and follow the procedure of filling out the form and sending it upstairs to Human Resources. Otherwise, just treat it as a phone call and a simple request of, and disseminate that information and not report that to the county. I need the Board of Health's blessing on going that route. The other thing that I do need to bring up on this, too, is the privacy, you know, the HIPAA coverage for lead cases, I think, is really the only privacy issues that we've run into in our department, probably anyway so far. So redacting the names, birth dates, things like that. And I don't know, I don't know how far down we would have to take that as far as that goes. I guess we could address that if we ever get to that. We could ask for legal counsel. In the past, I've redacted. That's all I've done.
I can understand where it would be, and I don't think that, you know, that was probably one of the things that they considered when the policy was written. I don't think it's written.
Yeah. Expected at that.
Right. This would be more for, you know, if somebody's requesting emails from one of the elected officials or a department head or something like that. But, you know, the day-to-day questions that you guys would get, and I don't know, I would assume it could be somewhat similar in the planning and development, you know, department. So I can understand it. If you had any conversation with Alyssa about it or...
No.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's up to what this board wants to do because this is a body that your department answers to. So, I would turn to the other board members and see if they want to make a motion regarding that Margaret's proposal for the use of the open records request or whatever.
Margaret, isn't that for? But most of these requests are coming from individuals for their own individual homes in most cases, right?
Well, oftentimes it's a buyer, a realtor, an attorney, folks that don't own the property but still have a direct link or interest to it.
Right. They're just acquiring about what might be there.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as it was the owner requesting that information, shouldn't fall underneath that, I wouldn't think, would it?
Probably not.
It's their property. It's their information. I wouldn't
right.
think that'd be open.
And that's maybe 25-30% of the time that we get requests from the owner. It's they usually pass it off to the pumper or the, you know, so if we, you know, if someone comes in with a request for information for greater than two parcels, then we would handle that as an open records policy and procedure item. Two or less, then we just business as usual.
What about if it's somebody that has nothing to do with that property? It's just Joe Blow out here just wanting to be snoopy and find out about somebody.
About where the septic system is?
I don't know. Then how would you deal with it? If it's
you know, and then we could put a caveat in there depending on my opinion. If I think it needs to... It is open record, so we couldn't deny that information
right.
to him.
Public information. So I guess it really doesn't matter.
I'm just trying to cut out the busy work and stay legal with
sure.
the county.
Well, would it be reasonable to maybe talk to Steve Owen or somebody or Alyssa and see if they have any other ideas?
Okay.
You know, before we completely go, you know, not necessarily circumvent it, but we can table this until the next meeting, and then that'll give us a chance to Margaret and I both can talk with we can talk with Alyssa and we can talk with Steve Owen and kind of try to get some better guidelines as to how to handle these, because I can certainly see what you're talking about the amount of paperwork that it would generate in order to send their request up every time somebody calls. So
we'll put it on next agenda.
We'll put it on the agenda for August. Is that right? June, July, August. Yeah. So get that. Okay. Yeah, we'll take a motion. If one of you want to make a motion for that, just a motion to table it until the August meeting.
I'll motion.
Second.
Motion and a second. Is there any other discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Margaret. And let's see. We've heard from homework. Community and Family Resources. I'm just sure that's not Deb Rolf sitting out there, but if John Hostetler would like to come down.
Yeah, we got another commitment. So I'm the fill-in. Appreciate it very much. I want to talk a little bit about Community and Family Resources. We are... a full continuum of substance use program. Here in Story County, you know us for outpatient services, which focus on evaluation, substance use treatment, co-occurring therapy as well, in which we work with people both mental health and substance use issues. But we're a much bigger organization. We're a value-added organization in Story County, in that the largest part of our operation is in Fort Dodge, Iowa, in which Story County residents do benefit. We have one of only three freestanding detox units in the state. And within that detox unit, we see about 200 people a year. It's limited because the funding is limited. The state doesn't have a funding mechanism for it, so we rely on county dollars. And there's all kinds of restrictions based on counties. But what we detoxify is primarily alcohol. Then next comes a large group with methamphetamine issues. We're also seeing more heroin, more other opiates such as OxyContin, and also folks who have what we call commingled conditions of being mentally ill as well as chemically dependent, and we treat them in that particular unit because it's monitored by nursing staff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so we can utilize some resources to be able to start people on mental health medications and other things. In addition to that, we have a residential program with an average length of stay of about 23 days. We have a long-term men's program. It's limited in space, but we certainly have folks from Story County that use it. Those are typically chronic men who have been through multiple systems. And they can stay with us up to a year. That's a project where I've seen some folks that I've even considered probably in that wet brain category, just really organically damaged. And yet over about 6 to 9 months, we start seeing some real progress with healing in their bodies, to the point where they start becoming able to look at employment, reunifying with families, and other great things. We also have some very specialized programming within our units, women and children's program, which helps with ancillary services so women can be in treatment, and then a full gamut of again, outpatient. That's connected with the unit, of course, here in Story County, which does outpatient particular services. So that is a value-added connection for Story County. I'm really here, though, today to talk about a specific program, and that is our gambling treatment program. We're one of about 8 providers that work with problem gambling. We have a much more robust service, I believe, again, through our Fort Dodge office in case somebody would need some type of residential-type care. The state only pays for the outpatient therapy, but we have our unit, which we can house people and give them more intensive services. But down here in Story County, we also have outpatient services in which we can help evaluate people and treat people with problems with gambling. And I know some of you sitting in the audience are saying, I don't think I've ever known anybody who's got a problem with gambling. It's called the hidden addiction or illness for a reason. You see somebody who's intoxicated walking down the street, you can pick it out. Somebody walking down the street with a gambling problem, you can't. And because of our society and the ability to have high levels of debt, people can really keep maintaining those behaviors until it becomes very self-destructive. I've been working with problem gamblers since 1988, and they're some of the most difficult cases because they, again, are comorbid. They have mental health issues, they have substance use issues, they have gambling issues, and they have some of the highest acuity of suicide attempts of all the populations that I work with, and partially because it's considered an impulse control disorder, and the fact that they just react to this kind of self-destruction that comes, and they become very suicidal. So our particular unit here, we work with 1-800-BEST-OFF in getting referrals and referral sources, and we work with folks through therapy, and if they need more intensity, we put them up in our Fort Dodge unit. Prevalence of problem gambling, it depends which study you look at. They're about 2% is a safe area for ever having a lifetime prevalence of gambling based on those who gamble. We know that there are folks, you know, we're not against gambling. I want to say that first of all. We just know there's a percentage that will have a problem, and sometimes understanding and being aware of what those problems are early is really important. We look at some of the folks that we're working with. We also, in addition to adults, are working with youth. Within youth for treatment-type services, we typically see some involvement, some penetration with student population, and it's internet gambling. And they become very involved in that, and it becomes very destructive quickly. Within our prevention department, we are working with youth, targeting high-risk youth as a part of our funding with the state of Iowa, and looking at, you know, a lot of times there can be crossover with addictive-type processes. If somebody has an alcohol problem, they can develop other problems. And so we're working with high-risk youth in addressing, you know, some of the risk factors. We also are working with youth on the other side of the coin, and this is part of the prevention model, and this is some of what YSS does very, very well in the community as well, is working on protective factors, those things that are very positive in youth lives that keep them from developing some of the problems. That's a part of our strategy. We also do education with a wide group of folks in the community that's informational. We are available to do presentations, and there's no cost to that. So even your public health workers, your county workers, other interested public would be glad to come in and talk about problem gambling. And then last, we look at community readiness. And of course, you know, one of the things we probably lag clear back at the end of the line is community readiness at looking at problems with gambling. We know that the increase of gambling that's happened in Iowa over the years has increased the number of people with problems. The closer you live to a casino, you know, the higher the prevalence. But we also know the increase in legal gambling also increases illegal gambling. There's more illegal gambling going on as well. So we're trying to just be a part of the community, work with other groups in education, looking at some community readiness, providing treatment options that fit within a full range of services. So CFR as an organization is much bigger than just Story County and fits well within some of the value-added things. I have, and I'll leave it here with the Secretary, just our kind of work plan for prevention that I brought along with me so you can look at it at your leisure and also your public health workers so that if they have any questions or have comments or have some areas they'd like us to help work with, we'd be glad to. May I entertain any of your questions?
The funding from to the state through the Prairie Meadows, they put money into that somehow?
Not directly. The state has a certain percentage they take from all of the casinos and the lottery. They put that originally when gambling was sold. They were to take one half of 1% of those dollars and put it into treatment prevention. They since changed the law, put it into the general fund, and then they allocate what they want for us. They think it's reasonable. That was editorial, sorry. What they think is reasonable. And from there, it's a competitive grant process. But indirectly, yes, the casinos are putting the money in. It doesn't come directly to us, but it comes through the state. We're very fortunate that this state puts a lot of emphasis on treatment and prevention services. Many states don't. So we are fortunate in that way. Anything else? All right.
Thank you very much, John.
John.
Murder James again. Environmental health.
Well, Queen of PowerPoint didn't get one together today because I've been busy, so so I got to go off my notes.
Because usually I get to see yours in the morning
and
in
the
afternoon. But
yeah, so there. not today. So lucky you, Paul. But I do have notes. So it's been a busy couple months since I've last reported. Matt got the numbers for the last quarter together for us. Well permits, 7 of them, all geothermal. Kathy's been working on the one on I-30 out there, Vetter. They did a large collection geothermal collection loop system. We've done 13 septic permits, 10 well inspections. We've plugged 7 wells and rehabbed 2 wells. And we've been doing quite a bit of water testing, but I don't have numbers on that right now.
You rehab a well. What does that consist of?
That is covered under the grants program, and we only offer that money to wells that are the only water source for that particular individual. And it has to meet set. Usually they're wells that are in pits, and then we rehab them so that they look like a brand new well as you walk by. So it can be a buried slab when you go from a bored well to, you know, you bring that casing together and up so that you don't get the surface water going in. That's one typical rehab. Or eliminating the frost pit and bringing that casing 1 foot above grade. That's the other typical rehab. Up to $600 per well. And it's a great program. More and more we're getting folks on roll wire, so it's not as popular as it used to be. for training. The three of us went to the DNR annual meeting. They started that up ever since Jim Stricker left DNR, the field office. He's kind of, that's been discontinued, so they started that up again, and they're very valuable meetings. Some of the things I gleaned from that is, let's see, what did we talk about? A lot about cutoffs on, you know, what, when should DNR cover septic systems versus when should the individual health departments cover systems, things like that. They talked about their CAFO money pretty much disappearing as far as doing extra work on that coverage. Let's see, what else did we talk about, Matt and Kathy, at those meetings? Can't remember. Okay, it'll come to me. We talked about the pumping program a little bit, which is a segue into our next thing. Pumpers, we're pretty much done with that program for this year, and then fiscal year, next fiscal year, it'll start up again to inspect the same ones. Matt came upon one individual pumper who was pumping from industrial waste, and it was actually just soybean production water, but it's classified as industrial waste. So there's a lot of back and forth with DNR, with the pumper, and then also with the producer of that waste. And so temporarily it's going to the city municipal treatment plant, and then Carmoli is going to try to land apply it themselves. Is that what the final outcome of that was? Okay. And it really wasn't industrial waste. It was mostly condensate and a little bit of bean water getting in there. But the problem is you have to draw the line somewhere. And so DNR classified it as industrial waste, and so you have to treat it as such. So that's why it could not be land applied by the septic pumper guy. Okay, so that's what.
Carmoli can land apply it themselves.
After testing and that, yeah, okay. They kind of have to, you know, they have to prove.
What they're really doing is they're taking a lot of liquid from the reverse osmosis wastewater, and now they're going to use that as
sort of as a follow-up to that, DrainTech and I, Mike Badger from DrainTech, and I are going to attend the DNR two-day class on high-strength wastewater and what you can and cannot do with that. So hopefully we'll get some answers from DNR next week.
Allowing land application of that or septic tanks pumping out?
Yes.
They haven't changed anything.
No.
Are they going to, or are they thinking about
something? Nothing in the works right now. You cannot land apply things from porta potties or holding tanks or industrial waste. You can apply fog, but there's some question marks on that, so hopefully they'll answer that. That's oils and greases, fog. Really icky stuff when you land apply it. You know, the smell is bad, and you know, incorporating it in, and then you can imagine the, you know, critters. Okay, so let's see. On to the next thing. Matt and I tried getting a probe that had power to it, and it just didn't work out. It just did not work out. It was ugly. It was really bad. So now we have a new iPad in its place. So, but I will say that with it being as dry as it has been very difficult pulling soil cores. You know, 60-inch soil cores, albeit they're very small, very, very hard to do. And I'm at wit's end on some days trying to get that coring done. In the previous years, I finally just made the or ask the homeowner to figure out what contractors we're going to go with, and then that contractor brings his backhoe out, and we go from there, and then they can charge it as part of the installation. So that's how we've approached that. But I'm still looking for solutions on that. Last week I attended a meeting that CDC, folks came out from CDC and IDPH. The state received a grant for a national tracking network. There's 23 states that are involved in this, and one city, New York City. And they are starting to try to warehouse data so that you can kind of connect environmental hazards with health issues. Okay. So they, and the things that they are looking at is asthma, carbon monoxide poisoning, mercury, that's closer to like the coastal areas with the fishing, nitrate, cancer clusters, birth defect clusters, lead poisoning, and then how water quality kind of matches up with this. So this is their, I think, they're going to start their third year on this grant. It's a five-year grant. Just getting this up and running. So it's still, they're still working on it, but it's great. You know, you do all this work, and it's nice to be able to possibly connect it and get some meaning out of all this work. As Terry Ollinger mentioned, we had a lead coalition, and then one thing I added to this is when I was at that CDC meeting down in Des Moines, some of the lead folks, they record when I come upon a house that has lead hazards linked with a lead poisoning, they record that so that that follows the property until that problem goes away. And that way folks can't sell that property without passing that information on and slip through the cracks that way. So it's something I'm going to look into. We've got three wells, tricky ones that we're tracking. Kathy's run into one, very interesting. The coliform bacteria levels are super high, and so the driller is working with a consultant on it, and it's very close. It's about 300 feet from the Skunk River, and they are thinking now that quite possibly it's being impacted by the river, and just the dryness of this past season. That, and then also they're pretty close to Martin Marietta, so the blasting affects that well and can shake things up a little bit. So they're trying to come up with some solutions for that well. And then we also have a well up near McFarland Park that we have been, you know, spending a lot of time and effort and money on trying to figure out their bacteria problems. And then the third one is, and we run into this a lot, this is a big, huge, 70-foot deep, large diameter well, and it probably should be plugged, but it would cost the homeowner about $2,500 to do that. It's the casing is good and everything, but the nitrate is high. So no decisions have been made on that. Well, it's a secondary water source. They're not drinking it. It's a bored well, yeah. I've not seen it, but 70 feet by probably 3 feet or
what is it?
70 feet. Yeah. You know, and it's kind of transferred. Do we make them plug it or not? You know, that's and the casing is above grade. So it's a tough one. One of the puzzles that we're faced with. Let's see. Fourplex, that is up on George Washington Carver. That's the mound that the undersized mound that had open discharge. Well, they installed a new holding tank and was hoping that dosing that mound would work out okay. It has not. There's still standing sewage, so I had them fence it off, and they've lime applied, and they were fast to respond to that finally. Or I say finally because they should have realized it without me going out and telling them that. But now there's a snow fence around the grass, but and they are working with an engineering firm to put a new mound in. I think they are hoping to hang on to the mound that they have and hope that the city would take them on as you know, as their treatment. It's not going to happen. No, it's not going to happen.
Haven't you've been warning them for a long time though? This has been going on. They've been saying they're going to have an engineer get this redone for some time now.
Well, they did draw the plans up, and I was under the impression that this spring it would be constructed. But then when I talked to the manager, he said, no, they're going to see if dosing would work first. And it does not. It clearly does not. So now it's time to install a new mount. And yeah. I haven't given them a deadline yet.
Sometimes.
I do. You're right. I told them this construction season, but that could mean all the way into the fall. And then, so you're a contractor, 60 days?
I would say that's more than enough time, I would think.
60? Will do. Got a call yesterday regarding the cellulosic plant, and they wanted to have the Environmental Health Department's blessing on bale storage. So I don't think that we need to get involved. They've already talked to the engineers. I recommended they talk to the fire department where these bales will be located, and plans like that, maybe emergency management. Keith needs to know about these.
From out by where the facility is going?
Well, I asked that, and he wasn't sure, but it could be as far away as 50 miles, he said.
Well,
so just little storage areas where it comes from, and then slowly bring it into the plant. And he doesn't know if eventually it'll be actual buildings that they put them in. For now, I think it's just tarps that are fastened down.
The ones I've seen, I mean, there's some up in Fernald. They're covered with tarps.
Okay.
There's some south of Colo. There's, you drive around the county, and there's some of them in several different areas of the county, and most of the ones you see are, they're big bales.
Sure.
Big, huge square bales, probably 1,500 pounds a piece, and they stack them up, and then they'll put a tarp over the top of it.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah.
So I told them I didn't think we had anything. I thought I'd run it past other folks to see if they had any ideas, but I think they're good. Talk to planning and zoning, talk to engineering, fire, us. So they're good. I guess it was early May, Xenia had their boil order. Do you remember that? There was a broken line south of Ames there. And so that went out, also found a hitch. I did contact IDPH, and apparently it's the operators that are responsible for issuing the boil advisory, and it's DNR legal folks that the boil order, okay? And that happens just about never, apparently. So the advisory comes from the company itself, and then if it's very dangerous, then IDNR legal calls that. I reviewed the hazmat plan for Keith, and then we're in the process of reviewing the ESF-8, which is the public health and medical. Robinson Wildlife, I had a request from Conservation. They wanted to expand on that primitive camping, and they wanted to know how to handle that, the waste. So instead of having folks maybe go down to Indian Creek, we thought it would be a better option to just provide a little ring that they'll go to.
Keep going. I want to see where this ends up.
This is not by the book, but it's a logical way to handle this. Just like the old outhouses, and then when it gets out of hand, cover it up and move it, And so I told them that they had to keep the 100-foot setback from the creek. And then we will go through the soils maps with them and make sure they're not putting it in any area that doesn't have the 3-foot depth. Robinson Wildlife Acres down sort of by Maxwell.
So why wouldn't they just...
South in Nevada.
So why wouldn't they just get Kaibo, a portable potty thing?
Well, because it would be pretty tough to get it down in there. I mean, you have to hike about a mile to get there. It's primitive camping. Yeah. And then you have to worry about, you know, vandalism and that kind of stuff. And they don't want to have a staff, you know, constantly checking on this thing. They will monitor this, but they're not going to.
Latrine.
What?
A latrine.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. So, just FYI. We've had a call. Apparently, do you all recall the old drive-in theater, West Side of Ames? Okay. So, surprisingly, that whole little complex that's got the sports and all that, that is on a mound. That's on an on-site wastewater treatment system, which I just assumed, because my son goes there, you know, I just assumed that it was hooked to city, and it is not, okay? And that is going to be sold, or it looks like it might be sold. And so the mound is treating, you know, that whole thing, and then quite possibly to the storage unit there. So that's something that I'm going to bring to Ames' attention to see if they could maybe extend the line out further. They don't want to do that because...
Then we have to take care of that trigger cord on the other side then.
So, I know. And that's exactly why they're, you know, they're
that
not...
That mound is really... I put that mound in out there at that theater.
Did you really?
That
okay.
That is really old. I mean, a long time ago.
And the tank?
And all it handled was just like 3-4 stools. It's got to be more than that now on that mound.
You have the...
It's not that big, that mound.
Do you have the plans or anything of that in that? Okay. Yeah, okay.
That's 25 years ago.
So three or
but
four
it's
got
to be way undersized.
Yeah, I agree.
But they added on to it and made it a little bit bigger, but probably not.
So, but that's what time of transfer is all about, catching those ones that need our attention. Then as far as complaints go, up your subdivision, we put in an Advantex, and they put in that discharge pipe to the ditch, and a neighbor complained about that, and we are having them remove that discharge pipe that came from the lateral. So that is...
Sand filter?
No, it's a brand new, new house.
Oh, they put the new one in
there. The Advantex system.
Mm-hmm. But they put it, I saw a little lateral go in there.
They did, and then...
Then they took out...
So they put the lateral in, and then they added this stretch pipe from the lateral for overflow, which I've never seen before. Somebody from outside the county recommended they do that.
That part.
So that's the only thing that's at issue. But, and then are there some complaints? Do we have any? Bold ones we've had, things like that. The standard complaints, nothing exciting. Let's see, just a couple more things here. I did a site review, and then I did the final measurements on that brook system up north, Story County. And the interesting thing about that is that they were hooked up, you know, their old system drained to a tile, which is very common, but this started backing up, and it was just like a ticking time bomb because they dug the hole for the tank, and it was so much water, and so they had to snake for like 200 feet and realize that this house had ended up plugging that tile. So another good reason for them to get off their dependency on the drainage tiles and get on septic systems. Ragbri is going through the northern tier of Story County. We do not have an overnight stay, so there's not a lot we need to do as far as, we just have to make sure that they have enough restrooms or porta-potties available, things like that, and Ragbri is very good about doing that, but no overnights this time, so not a lot on our plate for that. And then the final thing was the Rockstar CAFO going in south of Hickory Grove Lake. That was presented at today's Board of Supervisors meeting, and public comment will be invited again for the next Board of Supervisors meeting next week. Yeah, and it's less than a mile south of the lake, and they are concerned about possibly the manure getting somehow finding its way to the creek, number one, and also the air quality and the impact on the park. So, Matt and Kathy, anything to add? No?
Kristen, anything to add? No? Okay. Any questions? Okay.
Okay, last but certainly not least is the Youth and Shelter Services.
Hello, I'm Laura Bell. I'm the Tobacco Control Specialist for Youth and Shelter Services. I'm here in place of Jerry Bug today. I handed you the report of what we've been working on with regards to prevention throughout the county, but I'm going to focus more on what I do with tobacco control efforts in the county. I work under the Community Partnerships Grant, which is funded through the Iowa Department of Public Health, and as part of that grant, I work on different goals throughout the fiscal year. And our current goals are to work with schools on developing a tobacco-free school policy, which at this time, all seven of our public schools have tobacco-free policies for their schools. So it's working with our private schools in the county to address those things. And one of them is governed by the Archdiocese of Dubuque. So it's been some coordination with some people that are pretty far away from me to work on that policy. So that is under consideration at this time. Also, what we're working on is addressing Quitline, Iowa with medical providers, both veterinary and human health providers, just to get the message out about Quitline, Iowa, the services that are available to Iowa residents free of charge, and the importance of talking with pet owners and patients about cessation services that are available to them. So I've been contacting veterinary clinics, ISU, that also to talk about making those services, information about those services available to pet owners and patients. And I presented to TLN and student health staff about these services also. And I'm working on making contact with the Story County Medical Center and Mary Greeley Medical Center on those as well. And a lot of clinicians already are using these services and referral other patients, but it's just kind of making sure that everybody is aware of these services that are available. And then another thing that we're working on is tobacco-free parks and recreation policy. So it's just kind of creating that health standard within the community. Health and parks and recreation are there for healthy lifestyle choices and to encourage those behaviors. Also, a lot of youth use these facilities, so it's sending a mixed message when you incorporate tobacco use and these environments. So a lot of cities in the county already have these policies in place, which is phenomenal, but it's just kind of making sure that this is something that's like a all-round discussion, that people are aware that they can take these steps. And then we also worked on Team Maze, which was our second Team Maze ever. I worked on the health and wellness track, and we focused on tobacco use. And we worked with Story Medical Center to have the clinicians and nurses available the entire week. It was a phenomenal partnership. And they brought human lungs to make available to the students to look at as actual, this is what will happen to your lungs if you use tobacco. And it's a pretty jarring experience for them. And I will see students from time to time, and they'll say, I saw lungs. And it was gross. But it's something that they remember. Another thing that we added this year was chronological aging program on the computer, so we were able to take pictures of students and age them as if they were a smoker. And so that was pretty effective, and one young man became very upset when he saw his photo and lectured his peers about, if I ever see you smoking, I will take it out of your hands and give you a lecture. And just, it was very, very powerful for a lot of the students, which was good to see. And then another section of the maze that we had was addressing substance use, and kind of through a game show where we had the students do like a Family Feud kind of style game where they had to compete with each other to answer questions about substance use and the dangers of using substances. And then we had our legal section where we had the students go through a mock legal process, which is not nearly what it would be in real life, but we had a juvenile detention center there for students to go and sit in, and we also have community service projects available where they could either clean a toilet or wash windows, which was pretty powerful for them as well. And one student became really upset, unfortunately, in the juvenile detention because his child was taken, because the students were given children to a different section of the maze, and his child was taken because he was sent to juvenile detention, and he was very upset by that. And we found out later that this student is an at-risk student in his school, and the teacher was pleasantly surprised that he was taking it so seriously, because the student reported to a staff member that they could see themselves in that particular situation if they chose to continue on the path that they were on. Overall, we saw a little less than 1,000 students from Greenville and Story County. So all the schools participated except for two from Story County, which is phenomenal. And those were scheduling conflicts that unfortunately didn't allow the students to participate. But next year, we are working on continuing with the awareness of Quitline, Iowa through health care clinics, and also continuing our efforts with the 100% tobacco-free school policies. But we're adding, working with apartment owners, multi-unit housing owners and managers on developing smoke-free policies for their units, just because of the concern that a large number of youth are also affected by smoking in the house. Apartment owners are also, you know, it comes at a huge cost for them to rehab apartment units that have been smoked in, just because of third-hand smoke and, you know, the smoke that clings to walls and carpets and whatnot and gets into the ventilation system. So starting that education process and working with those that are interested in taking those steps. And another issue that we're looking at addressing is I met with the Story County Prevention Policy Board yesterday, which I'm a member of that coalition. And in Linn County, the people had a special grant where they worked on developing an ordinance in the county for the restriction of sale of unregulated tobacco or nicotine products. So products that are not regulated by the FDA, such as dissolvables, nicotine gels, nicotine-infused drinks, e-cigarettes, electronic nicotine delivery devices. Restricting the sale of those to places that have a retailer tobacco sales license so that they couldn't be sold at just kind of any particular establishment, just to brought on by the concern of, you know, these products are available to all and the potential appeal that could have to minors and making sure that they are treated as, you know, a tobacco product and recognizing the seriousness of those products. So that is something that the Prevention Policy Board is interested in looking more at, and will possibly be taking some more action towards that. So I think that was about it. Do you have any questions? I'd be happy to ask her.
Oh, I don't have any.
Still doing the surveillance thing with the police, going in to see if they're selling to underage cigarettes and stuff. At the convenience stores?
I think that they're doing those compliance checks with alcohol. I don't know if they're doing it with tobacco. It's not funded.
Tobacco.
It's not funded through my grant, if they are. I think that comes from separate funding from them. We are doing advertising assessments in gas stations and convenience stores throughout the county and looking at the advertising of these products in regards to location, schools, parks, the socioeconomic populations around these areas, and that's being done through IDPH. So we're providing the data for that.
A decrease in the teen smoking, has it gone up or down, or what do you think?
It's still pretty high in Story County, which obviously I'm not happy about. I'm a little biased. But it,
high school, basically, you think? Or
It ranges from 6th grade on up.
6th grade up?
According to the Iowa Youth Survey, there are youth who are using tobacco products.
I mean, they're getting it somehow, and they're not supposed to be able to purchase them, so someone's purchasing them and giving it to them, I guess.
Yeah, and it could be any way. You know, maybe there's people that are providing it to them. They may be taking it from people in their lives that use tobacco. It could be any number of ways that they're getting these products. And I know some youth that I offer presentations on tobacco products, tobacco control efforts to community groups. some of the youth that I've spoken with, they're very aware of these e-cigarettes, for example, and that they come in different flavors and they've purchased these products, and so they're very aware of what's out there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got no public hearing items. Any staff comments? Board comments? I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Motion and a second for adjournment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.